I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. This time of year is traditionally the testing season for schools across the country. There's a lot of preparation leading up to the standardized exams and then the days set aside for the students to take them. A small but growing number of parents are saying no and are refusing to allow their children to take the test. They're part of an opt-out movement that's been pushing back against high-stakes testing. Robin Roberts is a parent of three children at the Henry School in Mount Airy in Philadelphia. They did not take the PSSA, that's the Pennsylvania System of State Assessment, and she joins us on Radio Times. Robin Roberts, good morning. Nice to have you on the show. Do we have her? Nice to have you on the show. No, we don't have her. We're going to try to get her squared away. Again, we are talking about the opt-out movement, and I'm seeing my engineers scrambling to get her up on the air. And hopefully we will make a connection with her in a moment or two. Well, you know what? In the meantime, let me pull up one of our other guests. How about if we get Lisa Geisbahn to join us on Radio Times?
Hello?
Hi, and tell me who I'm talking to.
This is Robin Roberts.
Okay, Robin Roberts. I'm sorry. A very messy beginning of the show. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm curious about the reason that you gave the Henry School for wanting to opt your children out of the testing.
Well, my decision has been one that I've been really thinking about for the past year. The reasons why I decided to opt my children out or refuse the test is simply because the PSSA is a poorly constructed test. It starts with a predetermined failure rate for our children. And when I thought that the test was being graded by experts, it turns out that they were being graded only by temporary lay people who are given only one way to grade the test. And they're actually being paid per test that they grade. That doesn't leave any creative thought. There is no original thinking when it comes to the writing aspect of it.
And is that is that what you told the Henry School, that you objected to the way the test is being administered and what it actually evaluates?
Well, there are a lot of different reasons that I refuse the test for the way that it's being administered. The test in itself doesn't account for the very real challenges of people in poverty. We've got a lot of people living in poverty in the Philadelphia school system. It doesn't take into effect the stress, the hunger, the unmet basic needs, and the violence that goes along with people living in poverty. English language learners and special education students are required to take the exact same test, and they need to perform at grade level. I have a significant issue with the amount of timing it's taking to administer these tests. I have three children, and with my third grader, he would be testing for 12 hours. My eighth grader would be testing for 25 hours. It simply doesn't make any sense to spend that much amount of time on a test that doesn't help further their career, because when you're testing, you're not learning. And after the test, what I would concerned with is that many of the students are not getting back to the business of learning. So basically, you're losing these days of education.
Well,
let
me pick up on a couple of things that you said there, and we read about you in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and one of your complaints is the amount of time, literally the amount of days that go into preparing for the test. Help us understand the time involved.
I didn't hear you.
Okay, for some reason we're having some kind of... Did you hear me, Robin Roberts?
Yes, I heard you, but I didn't hear your question.
Oh, you didn't hear my question. All right, I'm going to ask it again then. Do you have concern about the time, literally the numbers of days that go into preparing for the test?
Absolutely. I mean, it just seems our teachers are creative, they are innovative, they have a love for doing what they're doing. When we are spending so much time for the test prep, so that we get the children ready to take this one particular test, what we're doing is we're asking our teachers just to be trainers and our children not to be thinkers, but just to be followers.
How much time are we talking about? I mean, in terms of the preparation your children were expected to do?
It is difficult to tell because the test prep is wrapped up in the curriculum. So the homework, the way that I can figure it out is the type of homework sheets are coming home. This is the test prep, and the test prep is going on all day long. Mm. So if you look at the bottom of the math worksheets or the writing worksheets, it's all being brought out by the PSSA. It's all test prep. So the teachers that go above and beyond, that have them do extra work or do projects instead, that is sort of outside of the curriculum, because what they're supposed to be doing at this point in time is a lot of the test prep. The parents don't really know how much time is being done for prepping.
They're just not aware of how that is integrated, I guess, into the school day. I'm curious, did your children take the PSSA test before, for instance, last year?
They did take the PSSAs. I am not opposed to a good standardized test. Standardized testing doesn't necessarily mean that everyone gets the same questions. It means that people are put on a similar playing field, so you can accurately determine what is being learned. They did take the PSSA last year because I needed to do the research to make myself feel comfortable in having them refuse the test. Like I said, it took a year for me to come to that decision. I was trying to find a reason for them to take it. And what I realized is that there is nothing about the PSSA that I want attached to my children. I don't want that test score, that hash mark on the piece of paper to mean anything to them. Nothing for their self-esteem, their self-confidence, their self-worth. That hash mark means a lot to a lot of people. And I would like to have the information that my children are smart and they're learning, but this test does not do that.
And how did they do when they took the test?
My son, 8th grade, is advanced. My daughter is high proficient and advanced. And my son was in 2nd grade last year, so he's never taken the PSSA.
And how did the school, your children attend the Henry School in Philadelphia, how did they respond to your opting out?
It's very quiet because there's a lot that they cannot say. Just from a legal basis, the schools are not supposed to ask you why you're opting out, why you're refusing the test. I am more than willing to talk to anyone about it, but I just think at this time with the testing going on, it is a precarious situation for the test. I know that I have gotten quite a bit of support from many of the teachers, and I feel that in my view is the way to go, because the way that the PSSA is now being integrated into all aspects of education, there are assignments and attachments to teacher evaluations now. I don't understand there is any purpose for the PSSA score from 2014 to be attached to a teacher's evaluation when there's absolutely no way that they can correct a problem or see what the issue was. There is absolutely no way for the teachers to affect change with that set of students. By the time they get the information, they're off to the next grade.
We have a tweet from Joe, says, test is great in theory, but teachers feel threatened, so they teach to the test. Based on your experience as a parent at a school, and it sounds like a school that you are in support of, do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I think that when you have principals and administration that are interested in making sure that the school does well on a test, then that narrows the curriculum. We have very few extracurricular activities. We say that we're very much interested in STEM research and providing our children with opportunities for science and technology, but there's no time in the curriculum to do that because we are essentially trying to make a grade for the school. We're trying to make a grade on the test.
Do you think your children will in any way be harmed because when the PSSA comes back, it'll be a blank for them?
No. I believe that I'm raising critically thinking children. We've spent a lot of time talking about what the actual grade means. My 8th grader, he has been taking this test the entire time. And I really had to talk to him about and discuss with him the reason why we are not taking this test anymore. He's an excellent test taker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, it doesn't really matter. I do well on that test anyway. So it's not about his academic success when it comes to the test score. Their academic success comes with their grades from their teachers, who I value and respect. I know that when they give a grade, it's because my child earned that grade and the teacher was teaching to the level of the children that are in that class.
Do you feel that you are part of a movement? It's been described or called the opt-out movement. Do you feel like you're a member of that?
I feel that there is something else brewing. What my important opportunity here is to educate other people the same way that I was educated a year ago up to this point. It's not necessarily we're going to go and change the world by you know, keeping our kids out of school. It's about this movement means something. This action means something. It means that I no longer support what the district is doing to our schools. You may not have the information, the ammunition to destroy our schools anymore. We have a district that's been under state control for 12 years. It's not working out as well. We keep getting different reinventions of how we're going to fix the problem. However, the metrics stay the same. They only want to look at the PSSA test scores. The PSSA is not a wonderful test. It's not a great test. No one is talking about that aspect and how we are only using scores to cancel schools, to fail schools, to turn them over to charter operatives.
Robin, we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye here. And you referenced this earlier, but I just want to make sure our listeners understand. So if not the PSSA, what would be a good test that would evaluate all students fairly from your perspective?
And that is something that I need to look at a little bit more closely. I know that the PSSA is a poor test. I know that my husband and I were planning to go back to Missouri. The Missouri test is one that I have heard a lot more positive mm-hmm. attributes for. So I don't know the name of it, but I also know the accreditation process is one that is very expensive. So, you know, I would say that Middle States is the accreditation process that our schools should be opting towards. There needs to be a less emphasis on the amount of money that we are being told from schools that we don't have when we are spending $12 million for Pearson to take over the core states. So we give them $12 million, but yet we say that now parents have to bring in three rings of paper, that we now have to bring in toilet paper and tissues because we don't have the resources, our basic resources for our schools.
Well, Robin, we have to end our conversation there. I know there's much more to talk about, especially when it comes to the Philadelphia public school system. Robin Roberts, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
Parent of three children at the Henry School in Philadelphia. They did not take the PSSA, and we are talking about parents opting their children out of standardized tests. We'll be right back.
The Executive Doctorate of Business Administration at Temple University's Fox School of Business supports WHYY. This 3-year applied research-focused degree is designed to provide experienced business leaders the skills to address tomorrow's challenges. Executive DBA students receive faculty mentorship, online collaboration, and the Fox School's reputation for high-quality research. Temple University Fox School of Business. Discover the power of Fox. Learn more at fox.temple.edu/executive-dba.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, ukulele virtuoso Jake Shimabukuro grew up loving his instrument.
My parents would have to take the ukulele away from me so that I would do things like my homework and eat dinner or take a shower.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY. Inishnua Theater Company supports WHYY, dedicated to staging contemporary plays from Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales. Inishnua is currently presenting Midsummer, a play with songs by David Grieg and Gordon McIntyre, directed by Kate Galvin. On stage now through April 27th at the Off Broad Street Theater, 1636 Sampson Street. More information is online at tellthestory.us.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Standardized tests have become a more significant part of the school curriculum used to evaluate student, teacher, and school performance. That began with No Child Left Behind, continued with Race at the Top, and are included in the new Common Core standards. We began with a parent who opted her children out of Pennsylvania statewide tests, and now we discuss and debate the growing reliance on testing and this opt-out movement. And we have two guests who have joined us. Mike Petrilli is Executive Vice President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, also contributes to its flypaper blog and weekly education gadfly newspaper. Mike Petrilli, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me back, Marty.
Nice to have you back. And also with us is Lisa Geisbond, and she's Assessment Reform Analyst at the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, also known as FAIR Test, also Executive Director of Citizens for Public Schools, and that's an advocacy group in Massachusetts. Lisa Geisbond, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me on, Marty. Hello, Mike.
I'm assuming you two know each other. Lisa, can I begin with you? And I was doing some reading in preparation for the show today. Did you opt your child out back in 2001?
I did. I opted my older son out of the state test. He was young at the time, and in listening to Robin Roberts' story, I really identified so strongly with her story of being a parent, being concerned about my child, and starting to educate myself as she has done so well. Until by listening to her, how much research she's done.
Indeed.
I did the same. I had a little bit different situation. My son was on an individualized education plan for his learning disabilities, so I had concerns about that, a standardized exam, how that was going to work for a non-standard child. And, I chose to opt him out of the test, both to protect him from what I thought might be harmful or certainly didn't think would be helpful about the test, and also to make a political statement to the political leaders that were pushing the tests on us.
Mike, let me go back to you and what we heard from Robin Roberts, and it sounds like Lisa agrees with her to some degree, is this is a bad test. She was talking about the PSSA, that it hurts children, and that it's used to punish schools or punish districts. Do you think she was right on any of that?
Well, let's unpack some of that a little bit. First of all, I am not surprised to hear that the PSSA is a bad test. Most of these tests that have been used in the last decade or so are not very good tests, and that's a big reason why many of us want to move to the Common Core standards and to new Common Core tests that are much better tests, you know, that are more like advanced placement tests, for example, than these fill-in-the-blank tests. So I think that's a legitimate concern. My argument would be to mend it, not end it. In terms of the accountability that goes along with it, look, let's remember, these are taxpayer-funded public schools. And the taxpayers, I think, have a right to know how the schools are performing. Tests are not a perfect way to do that, but they're the best way that we've come up with. And so when you opt your child out of the test, what you're basically doing is making it harder for the public, for taxpayers, for policymakers to know how schools are performing. Mm. And I think that's a real problem. I think, my son is in public schools. I think those of us that choose public schools understand, we are getting a free public education for our children paid for by taxpayer expense. And so, some accountability to the public is appropriate.
But you just said, though, the PSSA is not a particularly good test. And that's the test that's used here in Pennsylvania.
Well, and so let's talk about how do we get these tests to get better. Pennsylvania has adopted the Common Core state standards, as have 45 states. Unfortunately, Pennsylvania has decided already that it is not going to use one of the new Common Core aligned assessments like most states are next year. That is something that I think would be appropriate for Robin and Lisa and others to advocate for. Say, hey, what's going on, Pennsylvania lawmakers? Why aren't we going to use one of these better tests going forward? I think that's certainly appropriate. You know, in terms of it not being a great test, look, again, though, we can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. I mean, I see having our children tested as something like a civic duty. It's like voting, right? We often feel frustrated that we don't have better candidates to vote for in our political system, but we still go and we vote. We vote for the imperfect candidates we have because we understand we have a responsibility to do so. Mm. So these tests, they're not perfect. I understand the complaints, but they do provide some information that is useful and important, and we are worse off if we don't have that information.
Lisa, picking up on what Mike just said about let's mend it, not end it, are you a mend it, end it, or an end it, mend it person? I guess I should be a little clearer in what I'm actually asking you here, which is, do you want to end testing or do you want to mend testing, to use those words?
Okay. Well, if you give me those two choices, I'll say mend.
Okay.
And there are two main issues that need to be, desperately need to be mended right now. One is simply, as Robin mentioned, there's just too much testing, good, bad, indifferent. There's just too much testing. Taking too much time away from learning. Last week, I went and heard a group of Boston public school teachers testify at the Boston School Committee meeting just on that point. There's just so much testing, taking time away from their ability to give the good instruction that they want to give, that you know their students need, that one teacher was in tears. It was quite a moving testimony, and she said, you know, I feel like I'm betraying the trust of my students as an educator. They trust me to teach them, and all I'm doing, I feel, is giving them test after test. A Boston principal told me that in her school, they are going to be administering tests on 90 out of 180 school days.
90?
Now, that's not 90
about half the school days?
Half the school days of the year. Now, that's not to say that any individual child in her school is taking a test on 90 out of 180 days, but her school is oriented around administering mandated standardized tests for that many days. And what that does is take a lot of staff away from providing instruction to students. So even if all the students aren't taking tests on all the days, they're being negatively impacted in that way.
Well,
so that's one thing. And then the quality of the test is another issue that needs to be mended.
Let me also pick up on what Mike was saying, which is when we're talking about public schools, we're talking about taxpayer money, and that the public has a right to know if their money is being well spent. How do you find, I guess, a measurement, Lisa, that can give taxpayers that information? Even beyond parents and teachers and schools.
Right. Well, as I said, I'm not against testing. You know, my organization is called Fair Test. It's not called No Test.
I hear you.
So we advocate for open, fair, and beneficial use of testing, and you can do that. In fact, the only way to use testing in a beneficial way is to scale back dramatically from the amount of testing that we have now, first of all. And second of all, we advocate for better types of assessment. There are models of school systems in this country and out of the country that use higher quality assessments that actually measure the kinds of things that Robin was talking about that these tests don't. Things like creativity, critical thinking, flexibility, ability to work, collaborate with others, and you know, we can talk about that too, but there are performance assessments that are not multiple choice tests that are being used successfully with much more successful outcomes in places like this consortium of schools in New York City.
And I do want to pick up on that. Let me go back to you, Mike Petrilli. But is there too much testing? That has been one of the complaints about the kind of testing that goes on these days. Just too many days spent in preparation and too many days spent taking tests.
Right. When those are two different things. So let's talk about that. First of all, on the testing, you know, I heard Robin say that in her child's school, they have 12 hours spent on testing. Well, that is out of 900 hours of instruction over the course of the school year. That comes out to something like 1.3% of the time. Is that too much? That doesn't seem like a ton to me. Maybe we could get that under 1%, but that seems reasonable. Now, test prep is something else, and this is where I think parents have definitely a right to be upset. But they need to not shoot the messenger of the test. They need to talk to their schools. There is no reason that schools need to be doing test prep, teaching kids how to fill in bubble exams or to do the drill and kill stuff. That is terrible instruction. And it also doesn't work. That kind of stuff, maybe you get a little short-term bump, but it does not help to develop kids who are going to be good at math and reading and these other skills that Lisa talked about. You go to high-quality schools, and they look at these tests and they say, look, if we do what we know how to do in terms of teaching, we're just going to do our program, we're going to teach a great curriculum, we're going to teach to high standards, and our students will do fine on these tests. If you're in a school where they're doing a lot of test prep, a lot of drill and kill, that should raise a red flag. That means that the school doesn't have very good strategies for teaching at a high level, and that is definitely a problem. I would argue that's not the test's fault. That means that school needs some help, needs some capacity, needs to learn how to do a better job with education.
Well, as we know, and this is very broadly speaking, because there are certainly a number of very good schools that work in low-income neighborhoods, but we know, we can predict that students in a wealthy suburb are probably going to do a heck of a lot better on these standardized tests than a school in a low-income district. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think we just know that because for a whole host of reasons. How do we factor that in? Yep. To you, Mike Petrilli, and then to you, Lisa Geisband.
Sure. No, that is true. And, look, I mean, severing that link between class and achievement, that's what a lot of us are working to do, to try to improve the schools in those high poverty areas. But there's no doubt that what goes on at home, what happens before the child's even in kindergarten, has a huge impact. That is why every state is moving towards a system where we look at progress over time rather than just a snapshot of test scores. Here's what's frustrating, to be honest, Marty, with some of us who've been promoting reform, is that, mm-hmm. These opponents of reform say, well, you were only looking at a snapshot in time. So we say, okay, let's look at progress over time. Now they're saying, well, progress over time isn't enough. We don't like that. Well, we don't like the tests. So we say, okay, well, let's move to better tests. Well, that's not enough. We still don't think the testing works. I mean, it feels like we keep moving the goalposts here. So yes, let's look at progress over time. Let's move to better tests. Then will they agree that this is something that is important to do for our children?
Well, Lisa, your response, and yes, your organization is called Fair Test, No Test, as you said. Can you respond to what Mike just said, and then we'll get to some callers?
Well, it's interesting that Mike mentioned this idea of we want to sever the link between poverty and achievement, and I certainly share that goal. I live in Massachusetts, which is often touted as having one of the best tests and highest performing students. Our students, on average, rank first on these national tests called the NAEP tests over and over, well, in recent years. But none other than our former Secretary of Education, Paul Revel, wrote a commentary for Education Week saying that we have not severed the link. Despite our supposedly great tests and good schools, which we do have, partly because we have a lot of relatively affluent people and well-educated people in our state to begin with, we have not severed the link. And we still, you can just line up the communities in Massachusetts based on test scores, and for the most part, the wealthy communities are on top and the poorest communities are on the bottom. And what you end up doing, this is where the high stakes issue comes up with using tests. When you, it's one thing to use tests to identify where needs are and then apply resources to meet those needs. It's another thing to use these test results to punish students by denying them high school diplomas, teachers by measuring them by their students' test scores, and schools by, intervening, turning them over to outside operators, shutting them down, turning them into charter schools, whatever. These are all ways of using test scores in a high-stakes way, which we've seen has ended up oftentimes punishing the very individual kids and communities that we say that or they say they want to use tests to help.
Mike, do you agree with that, that the tests are and have been misused?
I don't agree with most of what Lisa said. I mean, if you're using the tests appropriately, which is to look at progress over time, what you'll find is that some of these high poverty schools are doing an amazing job, making big progress, big gains. That's going to change kids' life chances. I mean, let's keep this in mind. I mean, regardless of what you think of these tests, you know, yes, they just measure reading and math skills, but we know that those reading and math skills predict all kinds of life outcomes. And if you do a better job helping especially low-income kids make progress on reading and math skills, they're more likely to graduate, more likely to go to college, more likely to do well in the labor market, more likely to get out of poverty. Right, we're having a big conversation in this country right now about upward mobility. This is it. You know, this is the number one, not the only way, but the number one way we're going to help young people growing up in poverty get out of poverty. You know, so there are some schools that are doing it and other schools that are not getting the job done, however you measure them. And the tests give us that information. And then we have a conversation that says, then what do we do? And that's a whole nother set of debates and conversations. But again, all the anger gets thrown at the test. The test is just this instrument, you know, and it could be better. Absolutely. But, you know, let's not blame the test for showing us that we have a problem.
I'd be curious about your response to that, Lisa.
Well, the problem is there's nothing wrong with using tests appropriately. That's what Mike says that we should do. That's what I think we should do. But we're not doing that. Things have gone way out of balance. There's very few people who will not acknowledge that we have too much testing going on and the stakes are too high and it's having negative impact. And in the people that are most often being negatively affected are the people that we say we want to help the most. And think back to some of what Robin was talking about earlier in the show, how, you know, Mike just mentioned, well, the tests just measure math and reading. So it happens when you have tests that just measure math and reading, and then you have high stakes attached, teachers feel under pressure to raise the scores in the tests in those subjects, or they could be out of a job, or their school could be closed down. It's a tremendous amount of pressure, right? So what do? Naturally, they narrow their instruction to what they think is going to be on the test. It's like a do-or-die mechanism. They have to get those scores up, or there will be consequences. Meanwhile, a lot of other important things, as Robin mentioned, get lost from their children's school day, things like arts, music, phys ed. Even recess gets cut back in some cases. So these kids, you know, who we say we want to help climb out of poverty, be successful, be able to function in the workforce, they're not getting a well-rounded, full education. They're getting what's we sometimes call a junk food education of test prep. And it's not really fair to say, oh, you shouldn't be relying on test prep, just give a good education and everything will come out all right, because the stakes are so high. Teachers are losing their jobs, schools are getting shut down.
Well, let's take a very short break. We have an explosion of phone calls here. It always happens when we talk about education. That's a good thing. And we are talking about testing, standardized testing. We've began with a conversation about with a parent about opting out of testing. She didn't want her children to take the PSSA test here in Pennsylvania, and they did not. Talking with Lisa Geisbahn and Mike Petrilli, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
The pressure to be popular makes a pressure cooker out of high school.
What's much more common is conflict among kids who are high status. They're kind of jockeying for a position, and they're going after each other.
What you learn in high school is more complex than simply don't be a bully. Stories from the high school food chain next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, presenting Treasures from Korea, Arts and Culture of the Joseon Dynasty, the first full-scale American exhibition devoted to the art of the Joseon Dynasty. 500 years of tradition, ritual, and honor from a line of 27 kings that shaped contemporary Korea. The exhibition brings many Korean national treasures to the U.S. for the first time. On view through May 26th. Tickets and info at philamuseum.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Lisa Geisbahn, Assessment Reform Analyst at the National Center for Open and Fair Testing, also known as Fair Test. She's also Executive Director of Citizens for Public Schools, an advocacy group in Massachusetts. Mike Petrilli, Executive Vice President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. It's an education policy think tank. He contributes to its flypaper blog and weekly education gadfly newsletter, and we are talking about standardized testing or high-stakes testing. And we have a bunch of callers, including, looks like, Lizzie from South Philadelphia. Lizzie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited. I took issue with what Mr. Petrilli was saying about that kids have to perform for us, and that it's like paying taxes, and that they have that they have to show us how well they're doing in order to get funding.
Mm-hmm.
This country is founded on free education. That is a basic right of kids to be able to get a good education. They don't need to perform. They need to learn. And it's our duty as adults to help them learn. And, I mean, I'm a social worker in a school, and I just see, I'm in West Philly, and the school is very poorly funded, as most schools in Philadelphia. And then making them take these tests is just like, there's so much pressure on them if you don't get these tests, and it's like your fault if we keep not getting funded. It's so much pressure for little kids to be going through when it's their basic right. It's like we have to nurture them and take care of them, not make them perform for us.
Lizzie, let me give Mike Petrilli a chance to respond to your call. Mike, go ahead.
Sure. No, thanks for the call, Lizzie. Look, let me be very clear. I do not think that we should link school funding with the performance on these tests, and that is not a policy anywhere that I'm aware of. Philadelphia schools definitely are underfunded, by the way, and that is something that absolutely needs to be fixed. But what I am saying is that I think it is irresponsible for parents to opt their kids out of these tests, because they are now taking away information that the public can use that will help us understand how schools are performing and know which schools in West Philly, for example, are doing a really good job and which ones aren't. And there are schools in West Philly with a lot of poor kids that are still helping them make great progress over the course of the school year. We need to know that. We need to then study those schools, help them share their lessons with other schools. But if everybody opts their kids out of tests, then we don't have that information. You know, it's a little bit like vaccinations, I would say. And this isn't my idea, but others have made this point that, you know, if it's trendy among some to opt your kid out of vaccinations, and they will probably be okay. But if a lot of parents opt their kids out of vaccinations, as has happened in some places like in Colorado, then all of a sudden the whole population has a much higher risk of some kind of epidemic. So, you know, it's not just about the experience your own child is having. It's what's necessary for the public good. The public needs information.
But I think to use your vaccination example, I think what the parents are saying is that we want a better vaccination. We don't want the old one that they don't think really works particularly well. But let me give Lisa a chance to weigh in as well. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes, better vaccinations and this question of accountability that Lizzie brings up, that schools and children are being held accountable to produce test scores so they can be funded. Now, where is the accountability for the test makers and the policymakers that are imposing these dubious tests on us? My colleague at Fair Test, Bob Schaefer, likes to say there's more public oversight and control over the food we feed our pets than over the tests politicians give our kids. There are real questions, and Robin mentioned the issue of who's grading them. Now with the new test, Pearson wants to look into robo-grading of the essays.
in Massachusetts, one of the purposes for the field tests of the Massachusetts Common Core tests is to try out robo-grading, computerized grading of essays. And there's an MIT professor named Les Perlman who has a lot to say on that issue, how bogus it is. So, where's the accountability for the tests that are being used to hold our kids and our schools and our teachers accountable?
Lizzie, thanks for the call. And I want to just go back to you, Mike, and then I do want to go back to our callers. And you had talked about the Common Core standards and the tests associated with that. So how are these better tests from your perspective?
Well, and again, keep in mind, Pennsylvania has not decided to use them, which is a shame. I hope Lisa will advocate for states to move to these better tests, better vaccinations. They are more akin to, if parents are familiar with advanced placement tests, there's going to be more writing, there's going to be more open responses. They're going to be on computers, which is going to allow them to come up with more interesting kinds of items, like in math, for example, visualizations and things like that. The hope here is that we really can jump to a whole new generation of testing that asks really good, interesting, challenging questions, gets kids to think, and demonstrates whether kids are able to do the sorts of things they'll have to do if they're going to go on and succeed in college or go on and succeed in the workplace. And so, I think that it's going to meet a lot of the concerns that parents like Lisa and Robin have had. So, but what's frustrating to me is that I don't hear the opt-out crowd saying, hey, let's get everybody on board moving to these better tests. In fact, in many cases, they are being, they're arguing against the Common Core, too. So it makes me think that, for all we've heard from Lisa saying they want a fair test, not no test, the message I keep hearing is, no tests.
Well, let me give you a chance to respond to that, Lisa, and then we'll get back to our callers. We have another Lisa waiting in the wings.
Okay. Well, no, I'm not going to get on board in promoting the Common Core test because there's not a lot of accountability for the quality of those tests yet. There's not a lot of transparency. We don't really know if the hype that we're hearing, by the way, generously funded by people like Bill Gates, who it's been calculated he spent upwards of $2 billion on promoting the Common Core so far, so that there's like a huge amount of money going to sell parents and everybody on Common Core testing. And as Mike has noticed, parents are not buying it because they've been sold these arguments before. The last, No Child Left Behind tests were supposed to close achievement gaps and improve academic achievement, and that didn't really pan out. So we're on to the next set of tests. Again, we're not no test. We are for scaling back the amount of testing, which moving to these Common Core tests won't necessarily do, and training teachers how to use more high-quality assessments like performance assessments that are based on the work that their students do in class every day.
But there are things like grade inflation and an A in one school might be a C in another school or even in another class. How do you, level the playing field, Lisa? So that an A means an A or a B means a B.
Well, it's interesting to look at this other trend. We're talking about when you can rely on grades to predict how people are going to do after high school. There's another sort of counter trend going on that we're tracking and encouraging a fair test, and that is the numbers of colleges going test optional admissions. And we have at our website, fairtest.org, a growing list of more than 800 test optional colleges. And what they found is that grades are actually better predictors of how students will do in college, and by relying on grades and lessening the reliance on standardized test scores like SATs and ACTs, they're able to get a more diverse student population, in other words, open the pipeline to give opportunities to a more diverse group of students, which Mike and I both want to see. And so it's interesting that colleges are finding that by lessening their reliance on standardized tests, they get a better, more diverse group of students, whereas in K-12 we're still just sort of stuck in this standardized test-based way of trying to level the playing field.
Let me get another Lisa to join our conversation from South Philadelphia. Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm listening to this from the perspective of a parent and a former teacher. I think it's important to remember there's a lot of money involved in standardized testing. Testing, in my experience, tests how well somebody can take a test, and that there's so much anxiety involved. There is a lot of money. Pearson is a multinational corporation. The kind of corporate education reform that is being advocated by the Thomas B. Fordham Institute cannot happen without tests. Tests are the engine. And as Robin pointed out, you know, these are not marked by experienced teachers or some kind of panel experts. This is done, you know, on piecework. And I think when you look at where these tests are going, it's very frightening. You know, I can say from my own children, one of them was a fabulous test taker, and the other one was a terrible test taker. And that wasn't an indication of anything. They both graduated from college. But when you have a situation where now kindergartners are being given homework, which is how to fill in a bubble, you're going in a very dangerous direction.
Well, Lisa,
money drives this.
Well, let me give Mike Petrilli a chance to respond to your comments. Thanks for the call, Lisa. Mike, go ahead.
Sure. First of all, if a school is assigning kindergartners homework to fill in bubbles, then that is a terrible school, and you are right to be angry at them. There are great schools in Philadelphia and elsewhere that are not doing that sort of thing and end up doing okay on these tests. So, again, let's make sure we're not shooting the messenger. Everybody deserves good schools, and if your school is freaking out and doing things like that, that is a huge problem. Mm. You know, this thing about money and it's all, look, try to explain why it is the civil rights groups on the left who are the strongest testing proponents of anybody right now. They believe that the tests and the information from it exposes these achievement gaps that we have and keeps pressure on our public schools to address them. And that is why many, you know, most of the civil rights groups are lined up saying we need to have this information because it's an equity issue. You know, and it's mostly parents, generally, I would say, who are more affluent, you know, whose kids are going to do fine, are going to go to college, who are the ones who are angry about these tests. And it's probably true that for their kids, for our kids, they're not going to add a whole lot of value. But it's incredibly important for kids who are growing up in poverty so that we can pinpoint where things are working well and where it's not. And to take that away, I think, would be a huge step in the wrong direction.
Let me get another caller. And this is Tim from New Lisbon, New Jersey. And Tim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am pretty much ready to announce that we should fire all the administrators and take that money and double the number of teachers and give them a proper pay and let the local minds do the teaching like they once did before when we had a good education system. Thank you.
Tim, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I'm not sure. I mean, put this to you, Lisa. I'm not exactly sure there was a good old days of education in this country. It seems we have been struggling with these issues in many different ways, probably since our founding. But I'd be curious again what you say to Tim, which is get rid of the administrators, invest in the classroom, and you're going to have a better result.
Well, yes, we should invest in the classroom. We should invest in supporting our teachers instead of turning them into sort of test prep robots, which many of them feel like. Again, I'll harken back to that group of Boston teachers who came to plead to the Boston School Committee that they feel like they are being forced to just spend all of their time on the test. And again, I just think it's not fair for Mike to say, oh, don't do that. That's bad. You know, don't ignore all the threats to your livelihood and your job and your school, and don't pay so much attention to the testing. Give a well-rounded education. They are under tremendous pressure. So, yes, invest in our schools. You know, there's a lot of talk about how the United States has to keep up with our global competitors and looking at other school systems around the world that are supposedly doing better than ours. Well, one of the systems that's often looked at is Finland, and they went through their own school reforms, and they did it in a completely different way than we are doing, to substantial success. They didn't focus on testing. They focused on training and supporting and investing in their professional teacher class and then giving their teachers tremendous autonomy, the exact opposite of the sort of remote control process we have now where someone's pulling the strings and telling the teachers how many tests to give. And as a result, their kids, you know, in these international comparisons are doing extremely well.
Let me jump in here only because we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye. And to you, Mike Petrilli, sometime in the next month or so, the PSSA scores are going to be published. They're going to be in the newspaper here in Philadelphia, I guarantee you, because this is a district that's been under a lot of attention. And when people look at those numbers, what are they supposed to say to themselves?
Well, first of all, they should mostly focus on progress over time. You know, see whether kids are making progress from the beginning of the school year to the end of the school year. Particularly schools in you know, high poverty schools in Philly, can we pinpoint some schools that are having success? And I bet if you go visit those schools, those are not the schools that are doing the test prep or the fill in the bubble homework. I bet, again, you know, to you, Lisa, I bet those are the schools that are teaching history and science and art and music in a very thorough and focused way, that are focused on excellent teaching. Those are the schools that over time are going to get the results. And those are the schools we need to learn from. And look towards as really showing the way going forward.
Well, we could go on, and we do have to end the conversation. Mike Petrilli and Lisa Geisbahn, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
And people can go to fairtest.org if they want to learn how to get involved in opting out and other resistance.
And that's Lisa Geisbahn, Assessment Reform Analyst at the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, FairTest, and Mike Petrilli, Executive Vice President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, and that's an education policy think tank. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.